All right, everybody, welcome to the first episode of the Landlording Automated Podcast. It was a very special guest, my friend Brandon. So this is a recording done about a few days ago, and I went to Ohio, drove 6 hours to interview Brandon, and I hope this is going to be an awesome, awesome podcast for you guys. The very first episode is going to be about Brandon's take on why landlords are the solution to solving neighborhood problems. Sometimes I drive around Chicago or certain areas of my own town, and there are these areas and neighborhoods that, you know, obviously everyone's trying to stay away from. They're not the best neighborhoods. And I believe that landlords are the ultimate solution to bringing up these neighborhoods and recovering the neighborhoods. And Brandon has an amazing take on what landlords need to do to ultimately solve these challenges around the neighborhood. So let's go ahead and cue the theme song and let's go and hear from Brandon. So you bought rental properties so they can create more time and financial freedom. But the problem is you're spending a lot of time managing the properties. How do we automate our properties so that it's creating more time instead of costing it? How do we as landlords protect our investments, our time, and our progress so that we can scale our portfolio? That's the question we're going to answer in this podcast. My name is Sam Kwok, and this is the Landlording Automated Podcast. All right, everybody, this is Sam Kwok here, one of the Kwok brothers, and this is our first episode of the podcast, which I've still yet to determine the name. I'm either thinking about Landlording Automated or Automate My Properties. Either one of them, I'm trying to decide what I want to go with. Maybe you guys can help decide by your vote and subscribing to the podcast as well as the channel. So we're going to do a 20-minute video, and then we're going to do a second part 20-minute video, which first part will either be in Brandon's channel or my channel, and the second part will be vice versa. So, and if you want the rest of the recording, which will probably go for about an hour or so, I mean, who knows, right? Who knows?
Sure.
This could go all day.
Yeah.
The rest of the audio will be in a separate podcast platform, which we'll leave that in the link description down below. So definitely check it out. If you're doing a long drive or working out, my idea is, hey, turn your car into a classroom, right? And listen on. So
cool.
I have a very special guest in Brandon, which I'll introduce in just a second. But the reason why I started this podcast was there's a lot of resources out there for property managers, commercial property managers, property managers that don't necessarily own their own properties. There's a lot of training involved in that, right? But one thing I saw was there's a huge vacuum of mom and pop landlords that have, mm-hmm. you know, 3 units or 5 units, and they got into rental properties because, you know, their accountant told them to buy a rental property because it saves them money, or they thought it was a great idea, but there's not a whole lot of training and support in that world of self-managing landlords, 4 to 5 units. Maybe they're doing this on a weekend. So this podcast is designed to help you, landlords, to automate and manage your property management. I got my coffee coming in here real quick.
Yeah.
One's for our camera person, Dominic, which is the latte, and I got the chai. So. Which, by the way, we're filming this podcast right now in Paper City Coffee.
Chillicothe, Ohio.
Yes. So. Wow, look at this. I wish the camera can capture this, but
we'll get
it smells
some
amazing.
We'll get some B-roll.
It's got cinnamon. I still don't know how to say that word after 20 years in the United States.
Oh, gosh.
Cinnamon, yeah.
If my mom watches this, she will be absolutely thrilled because
wow.
That's how I said it to her.
Cinnamon,
I was 10 years old.
Cinnamon, yeah.
Cinnamon.
You know what this tastes like? This tastes like there's a Korean rice drink.
Okay.
That tastes exactly like this. It's actually like a lot like horchata. If you haven't had horchata,
okay.
It's a Mexican rice drink. A lot of my Mexican listeners will probably know what this is, but it tastes a lot like horchata.
Okay.
Yeah. So we got Brandon here. Brandon, what's going on?
I'm just busy. My life is a whirlwind with the trailer park, the laundromats, the YouTube channel.
Yep.
Just my life has evolved to weird point in 6 months that bought a trailer park and then my YouTube channel blew up. And some days I don't know what I'm doing. So.
Which, by the way, so just give you guys a little background on Brandon. Brandon's got 140 rentals.
Mm-hmm.
He's got 3 laundromats, a trailer park.
Yes.
A trailer park. Very successful story. In fact, Brandon, I this is something that's actually really interesting. When I first got started in real estate investing, I went to a guy like Brandon.
Oh.
And I worked for a guy like Brandon for free for almost a year. So what I did was I got started 2014, started working for someone like Brandon for about a year for free, doing like marketing and things like that. And then that's how I
I honestly learned. So Brandon, someone to actually look up to a lot. I've come here to Chillicothe to discover the secrets of Laundromat. But because we're on the topic of landlording, Brandon's got a really cool perspective on investing and how that's going to recover towns that are unfortunately in the downturn of economics. We'll talk about that. And we'll also talk about a little bit of Brandon's process behind landlording and what he could share for you guys listening. So first of all, let's talk about what we just talked about on the street. We're walking down East 2nd Street?
Yes.
Right. So we're in Chillicothe. Tell us about this town.
This used to be the first capital of the state of Ohio. Okay. Up in between 1800-ish and I want to say 1830 or so.
Yeah.
It moved for a real short time to Springfield, Ohio. Uh-huh. Then it moved back to Chillicothe, and then it finally settled in Columbus, Ohio. So if you'd walk through downtown, there's actually, I'll give him a shout out, there's a guy named, I think his name's Matt Day Photography. Mm-hmm. He has a very large film and photography YouTube channel, and I've seen him out in front of my laundromat taking pictures of different buildings. So we have this city with all these beautiful architectural styles. We have this really deep history. You can drive through all southern Ohio, this region, and there will be historical markers all over. 2 or 3 miles from my house, there's a historic marker. I never stop, but all over the state of Ohio, we have these brown markers everywhere, and it's the Ohio Historical Society. And I stopped one day at the side of the road, and I looked out and got in my car, and it says, "This is the ending of Lord Dunmore's War." I was like, well, what's that? And I'm standing there in this field with my phone. Yeah. There's corn everywhere, corn on one side, wheat on the other side. And I'm Googling, what was Lord Dunmore's War? It was one of the first wars fought in the United States as a part of the French-Indian conflict, but it was an extension of that. And where I stood 3 miles from my house was where that war ended, and there was a cavalry charge and all this stuff. And I'm standing looking in a field over this, and I'm getting, you know, immediately in my mind, I'm thinking, there was a battle here, this stuff, and it's 2 or 3 miles from my house. I had no clue, because I don't ever take enough time. And, you know, I walk, as time has gone on, and I get more involved in property management and investment. I was the president. I just got voted out, because I termed out for the side of my Real Estate Investors Association that meets at the college here. I was the president there for 2 years. And I'm learning more and more about the history and the architectural styles, and it's just like, in town here in Chillicothe, we've got all this cool stuff happening, but on one spectrum, that's happening. You know, we've got job growth. We brought a international paper company that just built a plant on US 23. I guess you wouldn't have seen it coming here to town from Chicago, but they built a $2.5 billion facility, and they've already said it's not enough. We need to double in size.
That's awesome.
And we've got Kenworth that's manufacturing state-of-the-art diesel vehicles, diesel trucks. They are building autonomous driving. I've seen autonomous driving happening here in this region. And we've got all this stuff going on that's so positive for economics. It's just neat going on. And then and depending on who you are, if you're better off, it's in the background.
Yeah.
If you're not better off, it's in the foreground. We've got one of the worst drug epidemics that the nation's ever seen, and we're kind of in Central Station for heroin and the opiate crisis. Wow. People passing out and dying on a very consistent basis in Southern Ohio.
Yeah.
And it's like the video, the content that we just shot that'll end up on my channel is, in my opinion, in real estate investors and entrepreneurs, people that want to get business done, are kind of what the first line of defense or the first line of treatment at those kinds of things. I met two Fridays ago with an individual wanting to start a sober facility. And we're having another meeting here next Monday with them. And we sat down and they said, well, Brandon, how would a sober treatment facility work so that we can take these people that are in mental health crisis and drug crisis, that are living on the street, how do we get them, how do we fix this problem? And I said, well, this is great. This is a conversation that I have been having with people on a national basis within YouTube and my, you know, different real estate communities like Reddit, Bigger Pockets, those kinds of things. This is a conversation I've been having on national stage. Let me introduce you to the concept that I have on a local stage, creating this like ecosystem to where, you know, somebody can rent a place to stay for $100 or $150 a month. And, you know, I get these messages on my YouTube channel, and I shot content with Meet Kevin a couple back in November, I think it was. And you look and you talk to these people, and they say, oh, that's the biggest ripoff, that $500, 800 square foot apartment that I have. And they say, that's a ripoff. And then I get all these other people from like the Bay Area, California. They say, I live in a place worse than that, smaller than that, and I pay $4,000 a month without utilities. And mine's all utility included. And it's just one of these things where I feel like investors have this hugely significant role to play in the economy and in addressing these problems, like with the opiate epidemic. A lot of the nation has a housing crisis.
Right.
There's an affordability crisis. There's a career crisis. We've got a college crisis with education. We've got all these crises, these things going on. And I feel like, well, the answer to a lot of these problems is more entrepreneurship.
Oh, for sure.
More people involved in starting their own business. More people getting involved in real estate. It's like, you know, I had these people, why haven't you started a tiny housing community yet? And I said, it's on the list.
Yeah.
I've got this list. It feels like it's a mile long. Yep. Tiny housing communities on there. A sober living facilities on there. Some sort of facility where somebody can live for $150 a month for a room or a bed or something. And this is kind of the condensation of the conversation that I had with these people with a mental health clinic. And they're involved in drug counseling and mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, see, there's a role for everybody to play. And I laid out my plan, and they're like, you know, and I don't want to take words out of their mouth, but they essentially said, there's more progress that we had here eating chicken wings at lunch over an hour and a half conversation than I've had for the past several years in meetings.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, and I feel like, and I truly believe this, and I hope it comes out on my Hillbilly Laundromat content over the course of time, that we all have this role to play if we are in the business of being in business.
Right.
If we are putting that at the forefront, because, you know, I like Thomas Sowell's book, Basic Economics. Mm-hmm. It's a real great, it's only 1,200 or 1,300 pages.
Right.
Real light reading if you're ever interested.
Yeah.
But he has a statement, it's really eloquent, and he said that profit is the reward that you get for making something better.
Yeah.
Profit is the reward for you bringing something to the market that people desire.
Yeah.
So you only get that profit. You only get that money when you have provided something that somebody else needs.
Yeah.
I provide housing. I provide laundromat services. Mm-hmm. You provide housing. You have courses that are designed to help people produce, to pay off their mortgage quicker.
Yeah.
Our cameraman is producing services for you and me.
Yep.
There's baristas here that are providing a service to people. I see right over here, there's a room full of people that are working and making food. Everybody's providing some sort of value. And when that value ceases to exist, unfortunately, they're not getting paid. And as you work your way up and go on in life, you know, theoretically, as you become more competent, you provide more value to the people that you're around, your revenue or your profit grows.
Yeah.
And then people look at real estate and they say, oh man, there's such all this money out there. I can't believe you're making $250 per unit on a house that you've bought for $15,000. And four blocks away from where we're at now, there's a duplex that I bought for $8,900. One side of the duplex was livable, like immediately after purchase. The other side had a foundation issue. I got the foundation issued, it fixed for $1,500. I had to put a new furnace in it. And people look at those numbers and they say, Brandon, it's crazy that you can make money like this. And then my immediate is, if everybody would do this, these deals wouldn't be available.
Yeah.
So what's that mean? is it a supply of rentals problem, or is it a supply of landlords and investors problem? Yeah. And from what I see,
good landlords too.
Good landlords too. Yeah. And like we did on the video, not all landlords are good landlords.
Right.
Not all landlords take care of their property, but also not all landlords are profitable. There's a lot of landlords that I run into that run very inefficient businesses. And when it comes time to paying the mortgage and fixing the roof, a lot of times the bank gets the mortgage payment, but the roof doesn't get fixed. Yeah. And then you end up with mold problems and this just cascading issue.
Right. Domino effect
because yeah. they're not yeah. profitable.
Exactly. So there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, you gave us a lot of gold nugget, obviously, but let's start with, I mean, this is so common, not just here, because I see this type of issues even in, you know, places like Illinois, a lot of times, you know, Midwest, you know, so Illinois, for example, I've talked about the city before. Without giving away the name, because I do own a couple properties there, but there's a particular town that's just got a really bad reputation, really bad reputation. And people, I think you shared with me earlier off camera, you said, you know, this town also has that similar type of, you know, stigma, right? Mm-hmm. So what do you feel like is a solution for that? Like, what do you feel like, how do we get the people to say, well, hey, this used to be a really bad town, but now it's not? What do you think is your landlord perspective?
Yeah. I think it's getting people that are passionate about being in business and people that are passionate mm-hmm. seeing things get better. But to do that, from my perspective, there has to be a potential for profit in there.
Yeah.
If just throwing large mounds of cash mm-hmm. would solve the problem, there would be a lot of problems in this nation that were already fixed.
Yeah.
I deal with a lot of schools, and this isn't to pick anybody out, but this is an example. I've run into some really school districts that have some really nice, well-meaning people in them,
yeah.
and they say, if we can just pass one more levy, it'll fix the problems. And then yeah. they pass their school levy. Once again, this isn't against any school district specifically, or school districts as a whole, or the educational system as a whole, but they get their money, and then they find out that another problem has come to the forefront.
Yeah.
And that problem that they thought that an extra 10 or 20 or $30 million would fix, it's not fixed.
Yeah.
It's still a problem.
Yeah.
So then from my perspective, it needs to be the efficient deployment of capital. Yeah. You and I are in business. If we can figure out and we can run on an Excel spreadsheet, which I love Excel spreadsheets and Google Drive, it's just, I love. If we can sit down and we can figure out, you know, what's going to provide the most benefit to this property? Is it going to be a three-dimensional architectural shingle, or should I go with a standing seam roof? Should I go with the old style three tab? Mm-hmm. And I can sit down, I can come in with those numbers and a cost-benefit analysis, and I can squeeze the money out of what's going to make that work efficiently. Yeah. Well, okay, cool. Then I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to find an efficient way to get things done. And so I feel like if you bring about efficiency, you bring about productivity, efficient deployment of capital, then you can take an area mm-hmm. and then bring an investment, outside investment. There's a lot, and I know you talk about seller finance a lot, and yeah. I've talked about seller finance a lot. There's so much stagnant money in IRAs right now, and stagnant money sitting in banks. I know a guy has like 1.2 or 1.3 million sitting in a Roth, and I keep saying, hey, you want to do something fun with that?
Right.
You want to make, you know, a little bit of money? And I've got a guy here in town, and he keeps saying, Brandon, there's all the money in the world at 3% interest
yeah.
or 4% interest. As long as you can get 1% over bank money market accounts, all the money's yours.
Yeah, that's true.
And so I feel like, you know, to fix those problems, you figure out a way to make money, you figure out a way to fix things, mm-hmm. and then you go out and you start getting capital investment.
Right.
Like, it's this place, the Chillicothe, Ohio, has been so run down for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we're sitting in a really nice coffee shop.
Yeah.
They've got exposed brick on the walls, and maybe
yeah,
we can do all of this. They've got the old style copper ceilings.
Yep.
And I've run into places with this copper ceiling, this kind of style. The replicated version of mm-hmm. it is $25 per square foot.
Wow.
I've seen people, they'll tear out ceilings like this and then they'll send it to California, like Bay Area. They pay $250 a square foot for the original
yeah.
thing. We've got about 2-inch wide old rustic style oak floors. I think it's oak in here.
Yeah.
And there's just all these architectural things going on. It's like, this is a really cool location. This isn't the only really cool location that we have here
yeah.
in Southern Ohio, But it took somebody as an entrepreneur and a capitalist mm-hmm. to come in and say, I think that there's a future here. I think there's mm-hmm. a potential. Let's fix it up. Let's do something.
Sure.
And then as somebody goes and they present the best possible business that they could, then another business says, hey, I think there's some money here. Let's come in. And it creates this kind of ecosystem where this, I'm trying to think of, the ball starts rolling. Mm-hmm. And as the ball starts rolling, more investors come in. And it just it keeps compounding over and over again. Yeah. And there's a bar, I think it's called Club or Studio 52. I'm probably butchering the name. It's a big microbrewery that's headquartered out of Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And they were looking at any place in the state of Ohio to add another microbrewery. Mm. And they picked an old bank half a block north of where we're sitting. And they're deploying $2 million in capital, mm-hmm. not for the real estate acquisition, which is silly to me. I would want the real estate. They are leasing a location and then investing another $2 million to turn it into a fine eatery. Mm. All because other investors have been investing in this area and they think that this is a high growth region, a high growth place. And it all started with people wanting to invest to be in a business. And we've had such a brain drain in this region of people thinking that this area is no longer cool. The people go up to OSU, they want to be a Buckeye, they want to get free tickets to Buckeye games. So they'll go to college up at OSU and then they'll never come back to town. And if I had a dollar, maybe not a dollar, if I had $10 for every person that I've met, I used to live in Chillicothe, I used to live in Circleville, I used to live in Southern Ohio, and then I moved. I don't live there anymore. I mean, I get thousands of messages on my YouTube channel. I know where your laundromat is. I used to go do there, but I don't live there anymore. I live in San Francisco now.
You're probably Chillicothe's cultural export at this point. You're actually bringing people back, right?
I would hope so. And you know, as time goes on, it's one of those things where there's nothing exquisitely special about my part in Southern Ohio. All we have all these dynamic and diverse economies in the United States full of really great people. And it's like, you could just try to learn to do something in your backyard. And with the proliferation of information on the internet, anything's accessible. It's like I said earlier, my brother learned to repair washing machines, and he's selling between $15,000 and $20,000 of washing machines he learned to fix by watching YouTube videos.
Right.
There's really not a... there's no longer a huge, I don't know how to do this anymore. If you can self-motivate and go and do it your own self, mm-hmm. You do pretty well, I think.
Absolutely, that's awesome. So another thing we sort of want to unpack in the topic of, the need for entrepreneurship, need for more, capital being deployed efficiently, right? Not just like, because oftentimes we throw money into problems thinking that solves everything. It doesn't. In fact, there's more instances where I see problems being solved creatively without money, right? So with that being said, places like Chillicothe and the areas that I'm talking about here, there's things like Opportunity Zones, which helps. What are some of the other incentives you feel like would if investors just came into towns like these? And we're not just talking about Chillicothe, we're talking about towns everywhere. Mm-hmm. What do you feel like is the incentive for the investors for them to come?
Very big yields.
Oh, I'm sure. For sure.
I talked to a lot of these guys and they're excited about a 6% cap rate. I said, I've got stuff with a 50 cap rate.
Yeah.
And they say, no, you're a liar. No possible way you could ever get a 50 cap rate with a property. And I show them my books. Like, holy crap, you did it. And I had somebody the other night ask me on Discord. They said, what's your portfolio average cap rate? And I said, off the top of my head, 16.8.
Yeah.
16.8%? That's your cap rate? I'm like, yeah, that's my net cap rate.
Yeah.
That was my last... I haven't done the books yet completely for 2019, but 2018 we hit 16.8, and I'm on the. My goal is 21. If my portfolio was operating as efficiently as it should, I should be at about a 21.5%.
That's either increasing income or cutting costs.
Yeah,
essentially.
One or the other.
Right.
I talk to these guys that want to do these big real estate syndications, and they get real excited at a 5 or 6% cap rate with a 8 or 9% IRR, and then they get some tax benefits. But there's tons of tax benefits for this low-end type of real estate. Sure. And, you know, the reason that the yield's so high is because you're filling a demand that's there. And I do a lot of low-income housing, mm-hmm. lower-end property. I've got plenty of nicer stuff, too, but I don't shoot YouTube content on it because it's just, to me, it's less interesting. Mm. We could go tour a mid to late 1800s historical house that could be on the National Register if we wanted to, but that's not interesting. Going through a tore up Army surplus store that I bought that was full of empty mortar boxes. That's to awesome. Me, that was way more interesting.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Than spending $30,000 on that house.
Yeah.
Up with six bedrooms.
Yeah.
It's just that's what I like. That's what I shoot content on. I think that emptying money on coin boxes on a rundown ish laundromat is more interesting than something else.
Right.
So.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's such a shame. Towns that once had, its glorious days, it shut down, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times I like to say the transformation of a town starts with the individuals, really.
Yeah.
A lot of times I see that are macro problems. I mean, even issues like this is on a national level, a micro problem. But if you look at the micro problem, you got these individuals that... Their spirits is just dead.
Oh yeah.
They're just like they've just kind of given up on life. So I like to say like it's kind of like the forest example. A tree that's standing alone has more likelihood that it can fall and die, mm-hmm. etc. But trees that are standing together have more likelihood for survival. And it's actually interesting if you take a group of trees and you take out the middle and pluck it out and the middle tree dies or whatever. There's an increased risk for the other trees around it to also fall and die as well. So ultimately, I think it starts with individuals at the heart level.
Yeah.
And then it goes up from there. Because if you got a few, individuals that are inspired, like you, it's contagious.
Yeah. And for me, I think the thing that set me on fire the first time was sitting down. I got my real estate license. My story is when I was 18, my dad had a heart attack.
Yeah.
And my mom at that point was cleaning houses, and my brother and I were helping her clean houses once in a while. And then my dad had a heart attack, and my brother and I had to go out and get jobs like ASAP.
Yeah.
I went and I worked at a warehouse up in Groveport, which is right outside Columbus, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother went and he was essentially a trash picker. He went and worked with waste management or waste mitigation with the city. I can't think of what the actual job title is.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked at the warehouse for 3 years, and there's nothing wrong with working at a warehouse. If that's truly all that you aspire to do, to work at a warehouse, more power to you, whatever. But I found that all these people were just in this point of this is all I'm going to do with life.
Yeah.
And I was making $11 an hour after 3 years. I thought, this... I want to have a family. I want to raise some kids. I want to aspire towards, the idealized life of what I thought I should have as a kid.
Yeah.
In order to do that, I need more money. So I just kind of went about and took a look. College was totally out of the option because I had to work. I had to help my mom. Mm-hmm. My brother and I were still living with our parents, and we were helping pay their mortgage.
Yeah.
They went out and got one of those wonderful all-day finance loans where the mortgage company sent them a paper and said, hey, sign this.
Yeah, and the loan's yours.
Yeah, the loan's yours. Whatever you want. We'll just sign the paper. So my brother and I were helping our parents pay their mortgage payment. That went on for quite some time.
Yeah.
And I thought, I've got to figure out how to make money. So I did this survey, and I was like, what job can I make the most money in with the least education possible?
Mm.
And after I thought about it, I thought, I'm going to get in real estate. Because in our town, everybody drove Cadillacs. I don't know what it was, but about the two generation ago, Cadillac CTS, everybody had like a tan or a white Cadillac. It's just like everybody had one.
Yeah.
And they wore nice suits and nice dress clothes, and they had nice watches. I thought, holy crap, even in my small town, everybody in real estate's really, really wealthy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went to college up in New Albany. It cost me $1,300 that I put on a credit card. got my real estate education, got my license, started working for a broker that's actually here out of Chillicothe.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, after a few months, I realized that most of the real estate agents are broke. They just get that stuff on loans.
Yeah.
But then I picked up a mentor named Norm. He got in real estate as an agent for just funsies. He had retired as the CEO of a local oil company. Uh-huh. And he wanted to do real estate for fun because he worked with a lot of agents, and his opinion of agents was really low. They're not that good at their jobs. But I started talking to him. He started mentoring me and showing me the other part of life, what it's not like to not be continually broke. Everybody that we associated with was just constantly broke.
Yeah.
The wealthiest person that I really had a regular interaction with that were friends of my parents worked at a TV plant up in Circleville. That was it. That was the highest bar was a guy that made about 50K a year.
So that just might be the answer, because if a product of mentoring is you, maybe we need more mentors.
Yeah.
We need more people like you
for
the youth.
Yeah. I think the problem is that for me to have somebody sit down and say, Brandon, you're smart and you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
You need to do this.
Right.
That was so different than what I had heard growing up, essentially saying, well, you know, the wealthier are just going to keep getting wealthier and the poor are going to just keep getting poorer, which I can, you know, obviously you and I continue to hear that all the time.
Such a disempowering.
It's extremely disempowering to know that, or to believe wholeheartedly that you can never escape. Yeah. And, you know, from an adversarial standpoint, you know, I looked at the rich as being the guy that evicted us when we were kids. Both, you know, either one of the guys that did. And it's like, you know, that's them, and here we're just the poor family,
right?
And that's just how life is, and that's how it's always going to be. My dad drove truck, and he did terrible at it. And you know, you talk to most people, and everybody said, a lot of people tend to agree or believe that truck drivers are salt of the earth people, which I tend to agree. But you know, he just never felt successful. He was never able to be successful in his trucking deal. And I thought, well, that's just what it is. You know, you can't escape watching my dad fail at trucking for 12 to 15 years. That's just how it is. You can't escape it. You know, it's just this thing that's going to chase you down. Poverty is just going to chase you down, and you can't do anything about it.
Right.
Getting in real estate, I started being around these people that were constantly broke. And then I've run into several really wealthy guys and as a real estate agent. That's totally changed my concept. There was another guy I met named Joe, and Joe was a truck driver. And he showed up in a 86 Oldsmobile. Really nice looking, and I was showing him a $50,000 house. And he showed up, and I thought, this is kind of weird. He just kind of called me out of the blue. I just don't understand why he wants to look at this dumpy little house. And I had been in real estate for probably 2 years at that point. And he said, I don't like this one. I see there's one over on such and such drive. There's a house over on Rosewood Drive, Brandon. I'm going to go take a look at it. So we go and drove over to Rosewood Drive. And I look at it. I'm like, this place is a dump. He's like, yeah, but it was built in 1950. All the subfloors are oak floor. They use 2x6s. I can rebuild this house. I'm like, okay, well, whatever. He said, because I want to flip it. And we're in 2008. The market is starting to tank.
Right.
I said, you're going to lose money. I said, no, it's fun. I want it. And you know, if you're a real estate agent, you think, okay, so now it's time to go do financing. It's time to do this. He said, he whips out a checkbook and he says, how much is it? And I said, what? And he said, how much is this house? I said, I look at the listings, $56,000. He said, I want to make an offer of $52,000 on today. I said, how you going to pay? And he said, cash.
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean? He shows his checkbook. He said, look at that number there, Brandon. It's like $356,000.
Wow.
I said, what?
Yeah.
He said, oh, this is my play money account. This is just my fun money account that I can do crap with. I said, you are a truck driver.
Yeah.
How are you doing? I said, well, I invested money. I'm in business. I started side businesses. I had an IRA. All these financial terms that I get used to now, I started thinking, what the heck?
Yeah.
You were a truck driver like my dad.
Yeah.
And here you are. You have $350,000+. You can write a check for this dumpy house. And even if you cannot fix this house and you sell it for a dollar, you'll still have more money than anybody else I know.
Sure.
And you know, I was running, that's just one of the, you know, the first person I think of that comes to mind. It's like, how can they have this kind of money doing the exact same things my parents have done for the past, you know, 10, 20, 30 years?
Yeah.
Why is there a difference here? And it was just this kind of thing. I ran into a guy named I can't think of what his name is. Another guy, he showed up, and I showed him this ranch house, a nice three-bed, two-bath ranch with an in-ground swimming pool.
Yeah.
It was a foreclosure. They had a grow room in the basement. That was the first house I ran into with UV lighting. When we got the electric turned on, all the lights in the basement kicked on were UV lights. He had a grow room. And I said, how you will buy it? And he said, I'm just going to pay cash for it.
Hmm.
What the heck? How did you end up with cash? Well, I've been in real estate for a few years.
Yeah.
Over the course of several years of me being a real estate agent, I realized that not everybody in the world's constantly broke. So I would sit down and have these opportunities while writing contracts or going out and showing houses. How is your lifestyle not constantly being broke? And most of these people were self-made.
Yeah.
And I had never run into anybody that was self-made before. I just kind of made this assumption. Well, they must have inherited money from somebody.
Right.
Some rich uncle gave them everything. And, you know, it was like, well, what did you do? And the common themes were they were really careful about their finances. They were what we consider financial independent. They would always save money back. They would invest their money.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them ran little like side businesses, and a lot of them were also in real estate.
Yeah.
They owned a couple houses. Not, you know, they weren't big time property landlords. But then, as the mortgage crisis goes on, I didn't meet many broke landlords.
Yeah.
And then I transitioned into digital marketing out of being selling houses,
mm-hmm.
and it's just this constant expansion. I thought, you know, I don't have to be broke for the rest of my life. I can. Not be broken, I can help people. You know, I'm very, I would like to think civic-minded. I'm very community-driven. You know, the high bar of my life, you know, as a teenager was seeing people start to work in youth ministry and churches.
That's awesome.
With kids, things of that nature. I always thought, you know, the high watermark for the service that you can do for communities, be a pastor, or you can work in a food pantry or stuff like that. And then, you know, getting in real estate, I was meeting those kinds of people that were multimillionaires. One of these guys I ran out to, he said, Brandon, he said, my wife and I finally decided on what we're doing for Christmas. I said, what are you doing for Christmas?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, we're going to buy scholarships for kids.
Wow.
I said, well, what do you mean? I said, we're going to go take 10 kids that are in the low-performing public school district, and we'll give them full-ride scholarships to private schools.
Wow.
And I was
that's
sitting
awesome.
There thinking, that's a lot of money. And he said, yeah, but it's Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, we don't need the money. We'll just go and do it.
Yeah.
And I thought, in this one freaking Christmas, this guy that's a wonderful, upstanding guy is just yanking these kids out of a low-performing public school system and putting them in a private school system. And that's what he's doing. He's like,
that's
next
awesome.
Year, you know, maybe we'll do it again next year. I don't know what we'll do the year after. I said, so I thought this is what you're getting for your wife for Christmas. Yeah, we pick somebody to give money to every Christmas. We just find something, some pet project we feel passionate about. And this year we've spent a lot of time researching illiteracy in our region. There's a lot of kids that are illiterate that have a problem reading, and you know, my wife and I are passionate about reading books. We're big book people. We feel if somebody can learn to read effectively, then they can set themselves on the path of being successful in life. And I said, so that's all you're doing for your wife? He said, oh no, we're going up to like Cracker Barrel in Grove City, or we're going up to Olive Garden. He named off, I can't remember what restaurant it was, but it wasn't a nice restaurant. It was like a $15
average,
a plate Italian place. It's like, that's what you're doing for your wife for Christmas? Yeah, that's what we do. We always go to the same little dumpy restaurant in Columbus every Christmas. That's our, that's what we do together.
Yeah. You know, that's the definition of, definition of happiness.
Yeah.
You know, to know
he's
that you don't
happy.
Need more than,
yeah,
you
don't
know,
need more
so,
than you have. But then going through and looking at the upbringing of this guy, the guy in this specific scenario, he grew up living on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what age it was. He was either 8 or 10 years old before he had his first pair of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
He did not encounter money till he was at that point. The first time he saw money was when his mom took him to town to buy his first pair of shoes.
Wow.
Prior to that, I said, so what do you buy stuff with? And he said, chicken eggs.
Mm.
I said, huh? And he said, yeah, well, every time the doctor had to come from town, because they back in that time they had a lot of traveling physicians.
Doctors went to
you when you were sick. So we would, depending if it was something bad, we'd buy it with chicken eggs. Mm. If it was really valuable, we had to buy it with wool or with mutton, with
that's
lamb meat.
Yeah.
And he said, I never ran into money. Everything was traded back in our area in that time. And he'd just have all these old, wonderful stories about what life was like growing up in rural America back in the 40s and 50s and stuff like that.
Wow.
And just to sit here and think, you know, I growing up, I had Nintendo.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It was an old dirty TV.
Yeah.
You know, growing up, my parents went into a decent bit of credit card debt while my dad drove truck because they wanted to buy stuff, worthless stuff for my brother and I because they felt like they were giving my brother and I a childhood better than they had. And it's the typical thing that a lot of boomer parents or Gen X parents do is they give their kids stuff. And, you know, that's not to disparage my parents. I love the crap out of my parents. Mm-hmm. But that's what my parents did. They got in debt for all this stupid stuff. My dad got in debt over his truck thing, his truck business. And, you know, running into these other people that have come from different, you know, very poor upbringings, really poor upbringings, yet they've amassed this insane amount of wealth, and they are being these huge sponsors or huge benefits to our community. I sit down and think of those people even today. It's like, that's exactly who I aspire to be. I aspire to be somebody that helps other people.
Yeah.
And then going back into the earlier part of the conversation, I feel like that maybe not the only way to do it, but the best, most efficient way to do that is to be a good entrepreneur, to be involved in business, to try and build towards those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because if, you know, I've worked at, it was the summer 2002. I've got a certificate on that. Once I get my official office, there's going to be a little certificate and you're guys going to see. And it's congratulations to Brandon Schlichter for being a hard worker at the such and such food bank. Can't remember the name of the food bank. I spent every single day in one summer.
Wow.
At a food bank. And
that's
awesome. You know, and the thing is, that lady, they fed 10,000, no, it was 10,000 meals a month in our county. And that lady was the most efficient human being you could ever see about giving giving food away.
Yeah.
And as time's gone on, I've run into these people that are not efficient with doing their thing in life, whatever their passion it is.
Yeah. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break with the video. So if you guys want to see the second part of the video, I know the camera doesn't last long with just about recording. So we're going to go and talk about the second part. If you guys want to go and see the second part, we'll decide which channel we're going to be on. But it's going to be on the link description down below. If you guys are listening to the podcast, we'll just continue on and, you know, you'll listen throughout the way.
Hey everybody, this is Sam Kwok here once again. I hope you enjoyed the episode of the Landlording Automated Podcast. Now, if you can automate all the same old repetitive tasks in your property management, how much time do you think you can save? Well, my team is launching a software called Flowmatics that can do just that. We want you to stop spending your precious time, energy, and stress and simply live your life. And that's what the software can ultimately do. So just head over to automatemyproperties.com and check out how Flowmatics can save you money, time, and energy by automating your properties. Again, that's automatemyproperties.com. Go and check it out and start living your life without the stress and waste of energy.